Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast. It's Thursday, the 29th of January. Coming up, hear from a Sheppy mum who's worried her son won't have a suitable school place in September. We get an update on how the probation service in Kent is doing following a damning report just 2 years ago. And Gillingham have added to their squad. Here from the new edition. But first, just weeks after thousands of homes in Tunbridge Wells were left without water, it's been revealed how much bills will be going up by. From April, customers of Under Fire South East Water will have to pay £21 more following a 7% hike. The town's MP says residents are paying the price for years of underinvestment. The company say it'll fund improvements, including a new reservoir. Well, let's get reaction from Alex Green, who's the chief exec of the Business Improvement District in Tunbridge Wells.
On the one hand, I understand that there is a lack of infrastructure that's needed, and part of the solution to fixing some of the problems that have been plaguing the town is that lack of infrastructure. And part of the solution might be increases in prices. But the problem is it just adds insult to injury that businesses are really suffering, and we've been really disappointed with how badly it was dealt with, particularly pre-Christmas when it was in the busiest time of the year, build up to Christmas. It took a long time to resolve, even though they tried to make it sound, and by they, I mean South East Water, that it was a fluke incident. The Department for Water Inspectorate made it clear that this was poor operational management. And if they'd managed and tested the water properly, none of that would have occurred. And the business in the town lost tens of millions. And so it's really impactful. And the unwillingness to offer serious compensation to actually avoid serious numbers of business closures, I think, is really disappointing. So the price increase in itself is another challenge on top of everything else, but I can understand. But it's more everything else they've done, which is just really disappointing.
And of course, it wasn't just before Christmas. You had problems in the new year as well, just a couple of weeks ago, which again left homes and businesses without water.
Yeah, so it's like I live in the town as well. I've been getting almost daily texts, like, or multiple texts a day. Like, you have no real trust in South East Water to deliver a proper water supply, and it is really frustrating. Luckily for a lot of business I represent, the town centre wasn't affected as badly this time, or at least directly. But what I think is sometimes underestimated or not realised sufficiently is when you have a reputation for the town not having water, that means people don't come out into the town. When people are concerned about whether their kids can go to school, they stop coming out and buying coffees. And so the footfall levels, the spend in the town was significantly marked in January, even though actually most of the businesses did have water. So it's not just the direct effects, it's the secondary effects, which are really substantial.
You mentioned earlier about compensation. Where is the process for that at the moment? There was an awful lot of talk from the town's MP about making sure that that was significant. Where have we got to as far as that's concerned?
Yeah, so the South East Water offered basically statutory requirements, which is about £1,300 per business, which for a few professional services actually worked reasonably well. But for the majority of retail and hospitality, which have lost 10, 20, 30, £40,000, it barely scratched the surface. So on top of that, they've provisionally offered £600,000 collectively. Thing is, that only translates to a few hundred pounds per business, which really, in the scale of some of the businesses losing £50,000, is pocket change. So, we've been working really closely with the Borough Council and Mike Martin, who's been phenomenal with all of this, to get some serious compensation and trying to apply pressure at the serious, most highest levels of government to make sure South East Water actually compensate properly. And we're hopeful that they will.
Thanks ever so much to Alex for chatting to me. Elsewhere, Southern water bills will go up 8% or £55. Thames and Affinity customers will also see an increase. Well, you can let us know what you think by leaving a comment within the story today at Kent Online.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories now. And a Kent boxer has been spared jail for his part in a New Year's Eve brawl on Herne Bay seafront. One man was left with permanent hearing damage after violence broke out back in 2022. 30-year-old Fred Ketteringham from Owlshatch Road in Herne Bay has been given a suspended sentence. Another 33-year-old man has been jailed for 2.5 years. A dad from Folkestone who died on a construction site in Sittingbourne has been described by his wife as an absolute gem of a person. 36-year-old Joe Heath suffered serious injuries while working on the Eurolink industrial estate last Wednesday. He had four children and his wife is pregnant with their fifth. More than £6,000 has been donated to an online fundraising page to help the family. A Sheppey family feared their son won't have a suitable school place in September after education bosses refused to assess his special needs. Ray was diagnosed with autism when he was three, and his parents want him to get an education, health and care plan before he leaves Queenborough Nursery. It would mean he gets the support he needs when he starts reception class. Mum Natalie Jacobs says that help would be essential. She's been chatting to our reporter, Jo Crosley.
Ray is four and a half. He currently is at Queenborough Nursery. He is autistic, so he's diagnosed at the age of three. Autistic, global development delay, and he's probably 90% non-verbal. We applied twice to KCC now for him to be assessed. They have refused both times. We provided endless reports from paediatricians, speech and language therapy, specialist teachers, and they've still refused. I have had to lodge an appeal. The appeal, I've had to state the law in the appeal to get them to listen, which I don't think anyone should have to do that. Because the threshold to actually be assessed for an EHCP is very low. And everything that I've provided shows that he should be assessed, and they still refused.
And just tell me a little bit about why Ray needs that special help that a plan would give him.
So Ray is non-verbal. He can't communicate his needs. He can't answer yes or no. He can't tell me how he's feeling. Putting him in a mainstream setting, there's going to be no one there that can give him that specialist care. So he does need a specialist placement.
And what would happen if you didn't get that plan?
So with the position we're in at the moment is, even once they assess him, if KCC agreed to assess him, the process of getting an EHCP is going to take months. So the chances are I won't get that in place in time for September, which will leave Ray without a school placement.
And what would that mean for you and your husband?
At the moment I work, I'm an insurance advisor. If he doesn't go to school, then I don't know, someone's got to care for him, so I'd have to give up work. I'm just hopeful that we can get it in time, but it's not looking likely.
And is there a message maybe you'd like to say to KCC about, you know, what kind of toll this is taking on you and your family?
Oh, emotionally, it's horrendous. And the thought of him not being able to start school in September is just not fair on him. He needs that specialist provision. And why should he not have it? I'd like to know why KCC have refused or twice, because it's clearly stated in every single report that he needs that. And on what grounds the grounds that they refused was, let's wait and see. But it's crystal clear in the law that they have to assess. So why they've refused, I don't know.
What is the ideal outcome of this appeal? Is it that they...
The appeal, if they say yes to the appeal, then they'll come and assess him. So that still doesn't guarantee that they're going to agree to give him an EHCP. So we've then got to go through loads of more reports that they'll do, and then hopefully they'll agree to give him an EHCP. And at that point, we're hoping they'll then name a specialist school. But they may then name a mainstream school.
So it must be really tough position that you guys are in at the moment.
Absolutely, because if they then name a mainstream school, I then have to go to tribunal. Right. Which then takes, I think, about a year.
Yeah, so you're looking at a real lengthy process in your hands. Yeah.
I just think the whole process is completely wrong. And it's not just me that's going through it. There's many families out there that are struggling.
We have been in contact with Kent County Council and asked them for a comment. Elsewhere, it's been revealed some parents in Kent are being paid up to £5,000 a year to take their children with special educational needs to school. Bosses at the County Council say the personal transport budgets are more cost-effective than providing taxis or minibuses. It's part of their legal duty, but we're told options are being considered to bring spending down.
Kent Online reports.
A council meeting debating about immigration in Sittingbourne has been disrupted by protesters for a second time. There was a heavy police presence at Swale House last night as bosses debated a border emergency motion. The meeting had to be adjourned following outbursts from the public gallery. Santander's announced it's closing 44 branches across the country, including two here in Kent. The move will put nearly 300 jobs at risk. Their banks in Ramsgate and Tunbridge will be shutting in April. Bosses say 96% of all transactions are now being made online. More than £250,000 designed to fund improvements in a part of Medway has had to be returned because it wasn't spent on time. The council had been given the money by government for infrastructure and community projects on the Hoo Peninsula. The authorities say they encountered challenges delivering them, so the cash has had to be given back. The University of Kent has scrapped plans to spend £50 million on new student accommodation and a sports centre in Canterbury. Permission was granted to build the halls of residence on their campus off Giles Lane in 2023. It would have housed nearly 1,000 students, but bosses say the rent would have been too expensive because of rising construction costs. Now, the Kent Online podcast has been told the probation service covering Kent is still significantly understaffed, but improvements are starting to be made in keeping the public safe. Inspectors have been looking at how inmates are dealt with after they leave jail for the first time since a damning report in 2024. Now, they visited the county in November last year when policies were being put in place nationally to try and ease overcrowding in prisons. Martin Jones is the Chief Inspector of Probation, and I've been speaking to him.
The one thing that I would pay tribute to, and I've visited a number of probation offices in Kent, is we've got people trying their heart out to do their very best to ensure that the public are protected in very difficult circumstances where you don't have enough staff to do the job, and indeed people that are newly qualified into the profession. So they're trying their best, but we need to do more to support them. One of the things I was encouraged by when we inspected Ken was they're now making use of artificial intelligence to assist them in managing offenders to ensure that they take some of those pressures and processes away from probation staff, because they're working really hard. But if you've got, you know, a third more cases than is ideal to manage, clearly that has an impact. So you've got to ensure that they spend their time as well as they're able to, but also support them with adequate training and support processes to ensure that they are doing the job as well as is possible. There's more to do, but there are some promising signs that Ken are making some progress.
That's interesting, the use of AI. I mean, it is coming into all different roles. Is that for things like paperwork, form filling? How is AI being used in this sense?
Well, it's very innovative. So a key part of the work of a probation officer is working with an offender. I mean, the scale of the caseload in Kent, sorry, in Sussex is huge. You're talking about 15,000 people that are being managed either following their release from prison or when they're serving a community sentence. A key part of that is the relationship between the probation officer, the person on probation. They sit down, they talk to them, they understand the risks they pose. And what they're doing is using artificial intelligence to capture that conversation and summarize that so that probation officers aren't stuck behind the computer screen, you know, typing up the notes of the meeting. The computer does that for them and also then assists them in relation to perhaps areas that might need to be explored. If somebody on probation is telling the probation officer they've got a new relationship, well, that may be a new area of risk that needs to be studied. So it's pretty elegant. And certainly probation officers at the front line are speaking very, very warmly about the impact it's having on the work and the ability to give them more time to do that very difficult job that we're asking them to do.
You spoke earlier about making sure that obviously members of the public are being kept safe, but also is there an element of making sure that prisoners are effectively rehabilitated as well when they are released from that system? Because for some, if they've been in prison for a particularly long period of time, it must be quite a difficult transition where they could fall between the cracks if they're not getting that one-to-one support and being looked after.
Well, so I've worked in the criminal justice system for over 30 years, and the release, the planned release of prisoners back into the community is absolutely crucial to ensure people have housing support, mental health support, you know, helps with drug and alcohol problems following their release from custody. And I have to say, not enough is being done to support people as they leave custody. If we get those things right, communities will be safer and you have fewer victims in the future. So that's one of the things that I look at as part of my remit, is how effectively people are planning for release and support in the community. We know from the data that if somebody leaves prison and they're homeless, the chance of the reoffending doubles. So actually, if you have somewhere to live when you leave prison, you're not living on the streets, actually the public are safer. So it's the sort of thing that makes sense. It's a good use of public money to ensure that people have somewhere to live when they leave prison. And those are all things that will ensure that the probation service is able to do that job better than they currently are. But of course, housing is a real issue across public services.
Kent Online reports.
Kent Football Club's confirmed it's not supporting plans for new housing, despite being offered land for extra pitches and changing rooms. Developers want to build more than 260 homes off Lennon Road in Headcorn. In a statement, bosses at Headcorn FC say they've decided not to back the application, adding while the offer of land was generous, they need funding to make any expansion viable. Campaigners opposed to plans meantime for a housing development in Faversham have been given the go-ahead to take the decision to a judicial review. Proposals for 250 homes off Ham Road were approved by the Planning Inspectorate in June last year. It had initially been rejected by the Borough Council but was appealed by developers. The Town Council is now leading the bid to block it again. A Kent MP has been telling us how important it is for everyone to eat more locally produced food in 2026. Sir Roger Gale, who represents Herne Bay and Sandwich, says crucial farmland is being lost to housing. Well, he's been chatting to Lucy and reckons consumers are partly to blame as more goods are being flown in from abroad.
We have got to stop the use of top grade agricultural land for housing. And successive ministers in this government have paid lip service to, oh, well, we'll only use low-grade land and we'll only use brownfield land. That's not true. They are building over top-grade farmland. And not only that, but the demand is not there. The houses are not selling. There are estates in Thanet that I know of, now in East Thanet, where workers come to a grinding halt and construction workers have been laid off because they can't sell the houses. So we're blighting farmland, pretending it's going to be used for housing when it may or may not, when we need that farmland for agriculture. We grow bread-making wheat, for example, in East Kent, or have done. That land is now blighted. We pay lip service again. The government pays lip service to self-sufficiency. We're going to be self-sufficient in food. No, we're not. You can't grow food in window boxes. If we're going to grow our own food, more of it, then we need our agricultural land and we need it for farming, not for housing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all about kind of that self-sufficiency, as you mentioned, and not maybe importing as much stuff from abroad, which is, you know, only going to become more difficult by the sounds of it if we're losing farmland.
We've developed a taste, haven't we, for everything available at any time of the year from anywhere in the world. So if I want strawberries today, I can get them. Strawberries don't grow in England in New Year. We, I think, have to get used to the idea that we need to get back to seasonal crops, seasonal vegetables, seasonal fruits, and use them when they're in season and grow them locally, rather than burning up air miles, flying stuff in from all over the world. We don't have to fly as much food in as we do, and we are. We're flying far too much. We don't have to have avocados all the year round. Do we? They're nice. Of course they're nice. Strawberries are nice all year round, but we don't have to have them. And within my lifetime, but not yours, we didn't have them. We lived on what we grew. And we have to some extent, we've got to recognise the fact we're going to have to get back to that and live with it.
The Conservative rep is also worried about how increased taxes introduced by the Labour government will impact businesses. A Kent charity that supports people with multiple sclerosis is expanding to help others with neurological conditions. The base in Canterbury is being relaunched today and will be known as the Kent Neurotherapy Centre. Bosses say it'll bring care closer to home for more patients in the county. And this is one of our most read stories today. Madonna says Margate is her idea of heaven after paying another visit to the seaside town. She attended an art event earlier this week and posted pictures alongside Tracy Emin. She says the whole town seems to be energised by creativity.
Kent Online Sports.
Football and Gillingham have finally completed a deal to sign international striker Ronan Hale. The 27-year-old is joining for an undisclosed fee from Scottish Championship side Ross County. He's previously played for Northern Ireland and scored 18 goals for his club last season. Well, he's been speaking to the Jules media team.
It's brilliant. Obviously, I've been around the ground today and I've had a look with my family and it's a place I want to be playing my football and, you know, I can't wait to get started.
Rumours have been circulating for quite a while, as I'm sure you were aware, but what was it about Gillingham that made you think this was the next challenge?
Yeah, there was a few obviously going around the board, and when I spoke to the gaffer and heard about the place, it was more the talk around the project that was going on here and getting ourselves back up the leagues, and it's something that I was excited to be a part of, and hopefully I can add my bit to it.
It's a very big move for you and your family, because sadly you can't commute from Scotland every day, but you must have just felt this challenge was right.
Yeah, I feel at this time that it was time to move on and try and, you know, better myself and score goals in different leagues. And, you know, it was I had a great 18 months there, and it was just time to move on, and I'm happy to be here now.
Yeah, you must leave Ross County with a heavy heart, because I'm sure you've made lots of memories that will stand the test of time.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I had a good 18 months there, and it was bittersweet as well. You know, I had a good season, but we got relegated. We went to have a crack at it again this season, and just didn't work out. So, you know, I thank them for bringing me back into full-time football, but it's a new challenge now I'm looking forward to.
You'll meet up with the new boys very, very soon. Are there any familiar faces here? Have you played against any of the lads before?
I used to play with Conor Masterson in the Ireland age groups, and then I know Romeo and Josh Andrews from obviously my time at Birmingham, so it'd be good to link up with them, and I haven't seen them in a good while.
That must help when you've got at least a face that you recognise, will help you blend in a little bit quicker.
Yeah, I feel that's the case as every team you go to. Once you know a familiar face, it's easy enough to integrate with a team. So, you know, I'm looking forward to getting in and seeing all the boys.
Describe yourself as a player. For those Gills fans who have not been refreshing their YouTube for the last week or two, what are your best characteristics in your view?
Scoring goals. I just love scoring goals. I'm that striker where, you know, obviously if I win, I'm buzzing, but then I'm disappointed in myself and not scoring. So it's one that I'll work my socks off and do what I can for the team.
Yeah, you certainly know where the goal is. How keen are you to kind of maintain that prolific nature that you've had at Ross County and indeed prior?
Yeah, I've said previously the best feeling in the world is scoring goals, in my opinion. And, you know, the levels that you go up, it gets even sweeter. So I'm looking forward to getting going out there, and hopefully I can get my first goal soon.
And staying with football, Kent's Alessia Russo scored twice to help Arsenal book their place in the inaugural Women's Champions Cup final. They beat Moroccan side FAR Rabat 6-0 at Brentford's Community Stadium last night. They'll face Corinthians in the final at the Arsenal Stadium on Sunday evening. That's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. Plus, you can get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, just head to kentonline.co.uk, and whilst you're on the website, you can sign up to Kent Online Premium. That gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.